This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Talk money to me.
Hello and welcome to Talk Money to Me, your need-to-know financial podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Candace Burke.
And I'm Felicity Thomas. Now, if you're new to our show, Talk Money to Me is all about sharing investable ideas which we come across as financial advisors. And we share financial strategies, provide updates on capital markets, and we explore the factors which are impacting the markets at the moment. For today's episode, we're diving into a thrilling and often misunderstood topic: investing in emerging markets.
That's right, Felicity. It's an interesting sector. And if we look at it from the beginning lens, right, of explaining what it is, an emerging market economy is simply one transitioning from low to middle income to high incomes. So emerging markets can be a goldmine of opportunities, but obviously they come with their own set of challenges and risks. In today's episode, we're going to be doing just that. We're going to look at what makes these markets tick, the investment opportunities that are within the EM space, and of course, investors' risks, which we should all be aware of.
Yeah, we'll also touch on specific regions, looking at the economic outlook and what makes each unique. So whether you're a seasoned investor or just curious about new investment avenues, there's something here for everyone.
That's right. We love to cover all of the bases there. So before we get into this episode on emerging markets, a quick reminder, guys, this podcast and the content discussed does not constitute as financial advice, nor is it a financial product. The content on this podcast is general in nature and you should seek professional appropriate advice before you make your decisions. Now, we're recording on the 16th of April, so all the facts are known at the time of recording. Alrighty, disclaimer done. As we like to do, let's quickly check in with the market sentiments and see what the bulls and the bears are saying, because things are moving rapidly, as we know. It's been a busy, let's call it 3-4 days for sitting in the market. So what are the bulls feeling in terms of sentiment at the moment?
So core PPI is in line with the expectations for March, so that's providing some relief following the hotter CPI. The Street also noted more favourable core PCE takeaways from key PPI details. The earnings season flagged as likely supportive for stocks, with UBS actually highlighting a combination of firmer macro backdrop and a stronger early beat rates. There's some thought that rates have more room to go before they become a problem for stocks. So Goldman Sachs especially has actually pointed out to the 4.8% level. While there's more cautious, I guess, on inflation Fed speak, they did not actually suggest central banks is ready to abandon the pivot narrative, and the FOMC minutes further underpinned near-term QT tapering. Bank earnings beat expectations with lower provisions, a widespread tailwind, so that's good. Delta talked up acceleration in corporate travel demand and the robust demand backdrop for domestic travel with its earnings beat and better Q2 guidance. You've got Costco, the March sales were better with the Street positive on improvement in the non-food trends. And then a bit of momentum growth is a relative bright spot this week, with rotation dynamics seemingly helped by the latest flurry of AI developments and upbeat sell-side research. So Apple was actually a beneficiary of both. CB, what are the bearish talking points for the week?
So in terms of the bear camp, there's a couple of, I'm going to actually say quite a few points that the bears are hanging on to. So we had the hotter core CPI data come through, and that was the third straight month in a row for March. So the super core was actually the fastest year-on-year pace at 4.8% since May of last year. The hotter CPI number drove further hawkish repricing of the Fed pivot expectations, with markets now pricing in a full 25 basis easing further along down in the year to December. The hotter CPI number also drove further bond yields up again, with the 10-year now US Treasury pushing through 4.5%, which is the highest since November. A lot of investors are saying that is the crucial number to watch out for. The upward pressure on yields was also exacerbated by soft bond auctions, with all three this week tailing. And the CPI-driven pullback really put scrutiny on stretched systemic long positioning and the dampening buyback support by the blackouts in earnings season right now. And also stumbling recently in terms of equities, the S&P equal weight underperformed. So that's worth noting. Obviously, pointing out the very obvious factor in the last sort of week has been the geopolitical concerns ramping up with the attacks on Israel by Iran. And this, if you watch commodities closely, you would have seen oil spiked last Friday. Now, banks in the US, they're reporting, interestingly, which is what the bears are pointing out, they didn't raise their full financial net interest income guidance despite talk of upside risk from less aggressive Fed pivot expectations. Obviously, inflation headwinds are still very much a factor. Small business optimism has fallen to the lowest since 2012, with inflation really being the biggest problem, very much entrenched in certain parts of the economy and more signs of softening demand. And the market volatility measure, which we touched on last week, guys, if you're a regular to our show, the VIX index, that spiked 26% in the past few days. So again, this is concerns really that investors are feeling a bit more nervous, anxious, whatever you want to call it, about the market, given the latest CPI data and geopolitical conflicts are really ramping up. And a final point, which you may have seen of late, is that gold has reached an all-time record high. And this is actually the third price breakout since the 1970s for gold. And gold is often seen as a safe haven for investors when markets and equities are uncertain. So that's definitely interesting. And I think overall, like I said at the start, the bears seem to be winning this week in terms of market sentiment. So markets coming off, you know, by the dip is what we're thinking.
We love that. So it seems like there's a little bit more in the bear camp this week. I mean, it's a bit reflective of the market. It was, you know, the S&P 500 was down quite a bit and the NASDAQ last night. But looking at futures, it's reversing. So lots to take into consideration. Are you buying the dip?
Buy the dip.
All right, let's turn our attention to emerging markets. We're going to begin with the basics. So emerging markets are nations with social or business activity in the process of rapid growth and industrialization. Some of the most prominent examples include countries in Southeast Asia, Latin America, and Africa.
Yeah, and these markets offer higher growth potential compared to more mature or developed economies. That's simply because they're often playing catch-up and therefore they have to really grow at accelerated pace, right? Because they're behind the eight ball in that sense. So when you have higher returns, though, it does come with higher risk, right, Felicity?
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got political instability, economic volatility, and less regulatory oversight can pose significant risks. There's also the challenge of currency fluctuations and at times lower market liquidity.
Yeah, smaller market sizes. So that's a concern around some investors. So let's now zoom in to a few certain regions. So starting with Southeast Asia, nations like Vietnam, Indonesia, and the Philippines are becoming increasingly more attractive due to their younger populations and rapid urbanization.
Yeah, and their tech sectors are booming as well. So these countries are seeing significant investments in infrastructure and digital services, which opens up really exciting opportunities for investors.
Yeah, and if you look at another part of the global economy, you've got Africa. Countries like Kenya and Nigeria are often at the forefront of the mobile banking and fintech innovations and sectors. Some really cool businesses to come out of these two nations, and their economic growth is propelled by technological adoption among the very young demographic. They just get it. They're more tech savvy.
Yeah, I bet our listeners didn't know that. So that's a fun fact for your Friday. Now, let's not forget Latin America. So Brazil, Mexico, for example, are really rich in natural resources like Australia, which makes them pivotal players in sectors like the agricultural space and mining. But economic reforms and political changes play a big role in shaping their market environments.
Yes, and that's a good segue to India, as one of the more predominant, probably you've heard of, emerging markets, presents a complex but really promising outlook, and it's getting a lot of attention currently by investors and asset managers. One factor which is turning a lot of managers to look at India in terms of their portfolios is their younger population. So India's population has a median age of 28 years compared to Europe's median of 43, which means that there's plenty of productive workers to keep the economy running, meaning more disposable income being earned, so therefore more consumption, which is good for economic growth, and obviously pointing out the obvious, fewer retirement age workers to support. So they don't have an aging population like some other developed markets are really tackling at the moment.
Yeah, like Australia, we've got the aging population here.
Yeah, and Europe, yeah. Most of Europe and Asia.
So look, after decades of socialism and economic stagnation, India underwent really a series of reforms in the early 1990s, such as privatizing the state-owned companies and encouraging private sector investments, which actually led to the economic boom. Now follows the global economic crisis, right? India's reforms agenda kind of stalled, and then you had a lot of corruption scandals which emerged, leading to economic stagnation again, and India being labelled as one of the fragile five emerging market economies.
And since 2014, under Prime Minister Modi's leadership, India has witnessed economic massive reforms there, really focusing at reducing corruption, decreasing government's role in the economy, fostering, like you said, Felicity, the private sector and the investment there, really investing heavily in infrastructure, which transformed India into a more pro-business environment. So when we looked at India, there's several factors that we believe have contributed to its potential and definitely growing interest in the emerging market sector. So a couple here we'll go through. Firstly, demographics, touched on it briefly. India has one of the youngest populations in the world, which is a significant driver of growth, given their large workforce and increasing consumer base that they love to spend.
Then we've got the economic policies. So pro-business, I think that's really important when looking out for emerging market that you want to invest in. So the reforms in economic policies, including efforts to improve the ease of doing business, lots of infrastructure development, the recent push towards digitization and financial inclusion, these all bode really well for sustained economic growth.
And I guess one of their fast track, you know, kind of urbanization has led to really advanced and innovative technology, which is the third point. So India is really thriving on the tech sector, and it's definitely has more of a startup ecosystem, which is playing pivotal roles in shaping their economy, fostering innovation and growth, and also creating jobs, which is great for stimulating any economy.
Then we've got foreign direct investment. So India really has been a significant beneficiary of FDI, which is likely to continue given its large market and growth potential. So initiatives like Make in India are designed to attract foreign investments in manufacturing.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, we also can't ignore the challenges. So there are challenges, including regulatory complexities, political risk, social economic disparities that could impact their growth and stability. They've also got environmental issues and infrastructure constraints, which also pose a bit of a risk, so that's worth noting.
I think the final point here, which is really important, is India's strategic global relations and trade partnerships could really bolster its economic positioning or present challenges depending on the global economic conditions and geopolitical tensions.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a cricket fan, but does that lead to the tensions between Australia? Who knows? But look, for us, like overall in a nutshell, there's definitely hurdles to overcome, like all economies. But India's outlook as an emerging market, we think is more optimistic than pessimistic, given the fundamental growth drivers that we just kind of touched on. Investors often consider it's obviously a higher potential market with significant long-term returns. And we do have those risks that we've outlined just briefly as well.
Yeah, and look, with these opportunities, managing risks is crucial. Diversification is key, so not just across stocks, but across the various regions and sectors.
That's right. And so you should also consider the geopolitical climate at the time, the geopolitical policies at the time, and economic policies. Keeping an eye on these can provide crucial clues into the market stability, market capitalization and the growth trajectories.
Absolutely. And look, let's not underestimate the power of local knowledge. So investing with managers that know the region and the sectors like the back of their hands, they've got people on the ground as well, is always really important. Now, in a moment, we're going to discuss the ongoing debate. Is China still an emerging market, or has it transitioned into a more mature, developed market? We're also going to be sharing with you some of our preferred fund managers and investment options to consider in the emerging market space, as well as share some interesting insights on an article that I recently read about developed markets transgressing to emerging markets. But first, let's hear from our sponsors.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
And we are back. So we've covered off the basics of emerging markets and touched on why India is a compelling emerging market opportunity. But China often pops up in the investor EM debate as to whether it's still a dominant emerging market player.
Yeah, that's right. So China is all over the press, right? You can't ignore it at the moment, you know, particularly around the concerns with their economy, housing and property market, and of course the geopolitical risks that have always been a flag and a risk for many investors. China is often classified as an emerging market, and this categorization can be a bit complex at times and depends really on the source and obviously the manager or the ETF or wherever you're looking at their definition. But financial institutions and market indexes still categorize China to this day as an emerging market, primarily due to the characteristics of its economic and market structures. There's a few reasons why China is still considered an emerging market. Now, there's a couple of points here, so we'll just walk you through them. The first being market accessibility and regulation. So despite being the second largest economy in the world today, China's financial markets are not as open and freely accessible to international investors as we all think in comparison to developed economies. And the government mandates really strict controls over capital flows and investments. You may have seen, guys, they often turn their stock market off or they manipulate their pricings around that too.
So the second point here is economic development. While China has high urbanization and technological advancements in many areas, it also displays significant disparities in wealth and development, especially between the urban and rural areas.
And from the market perspective, in terms of the major indices, companies like the MSCI and FTSE still classify China as an emerging market basket based on the criteria such as market accessibility, the size and liquidity of that stock market over there, and of course, the stability and transparency of its financial system. So I guess the benchmarks out there are still calling it emerging.
Yes, keyword transparency of financial systems.
Or lack of.
Yeah. Then we've got economic indicators. So China's GDP per capita, while growing rapidly, is still below that of developed countries, which is another criteria often used to differentiate emerging markets from developed ones. However, it's important to note that the classification of countries as emerging or developed markets is not static, and it can really evolve over time as countries develop and their markets mature. For example, China's enormous economic size and significant global influence, along with its advancements in technology and infrastructure, complicate its straightforward categorization as an emerging market. Some financial experts and analysts might refer to China as a hybrid or a unique case due to these factors.
Yeah, or just, you know, like you said, stands out on its own within the EM sector. I personally fall in the camp that China is still very much an emerging market growing economy. Given China's transition to the middle class country overall is not yet complete. So it will continue overall, China, to add significant numbers. It's forecasted out to 2027. An estimated 1.2 billion Chinese peoples will be in the middle class. That's one quarter of the total global economy population. So it's pretty big. And with this increased affluence and obviously disposable income that comes with more consumption, it's not just consumption of goods such as cars, technology and electrical goods, but of course more sophisticated products and services like digital payments, mobile phones, insurances because they're becoming more wealthy. So China, you know, was traditionally the powerhouse of the global manufacturing, I guess, house for decades. And today it's really riding the wave of digital innovation with the success of major tech companies like Alibaba and Tencent, to name a few. And these companies are really taking innovative and different paths forward to our American counterparties and peers and more developed tech companies. Not to mention China is one of the fastest EV adopters globally and is home to the largest or some of the largest e-commerce, gaming, social media and hardware manufacturers in the world. So I guess if we call the elephant in the room, or if I call out the dragon in the room, I should say, China always, I think, for the short term, at least in the next 10 years, will come with a level of geopolitical risks and governance risks, which creates obviously a lot of uncertainty and volatility in this certain part of the EM market, which is a really interesting point, which we'll go into more detail in later in the show, because certain managers and funds that we know and we look at often that have a higher allocation to China in the last few years have actually underperformed managers who exclude China in their asset allocation.
Yeah, interesting you say that. So probably one of my favourite fund managers in this space is GQG Partners, who have outperformed the benchmark in their emerging markets fund due to the lower allocation towards China. But first, I actually wanted to share with you an interesting article that they wrote about when developed markets become emerging markets or transgress to emerging markets.
All right, so we're all in for a treat. Go for it.
Yeah, so basically they released an article recently that highlighted that Europe is experiencing challenges typical of emerging markets. So it was very thought-provoking, but the key points really that Europe is experiencing issues like energy insecurity, government interventions such as nationalization of energy infrastructure, windfall taxes, and fiscal deficits. Now, these challenges threaten Europe's industrial and technological competitiveness in the long term.
Yeah, very, very, very interesting. And I know the article you're referring to, and it's definitely a good read. So for anyone interested, we'll pop it in the show notes of this episode if you're keen to check it out yourself. The article also compares Europe's regressive policies and the reforms adopted by countries like India and Brazil more recently, which promote economic growth and create a favourable business climate, which is a really interesting comparison.
Yeah, and another point was Europe's over-dependence on imported natural gas and intermittent renewable energy sources that have led to spikes in power prices and demand destruction. Mm. So this poses significant risk to industries reliant on natural gas and electricity.
Yeah, it doesn't help when you have wars in Europe as well. And then you've also got the nationalisation of energy infrastructure. So this was really interesting because the heavy-handed government interventions, such as the nationalisation of energy utilities like Uniper in Germany, I hope I've said that right, and EDF in France, they fail to address the core issue of energy supply and risk the industrial base long-term viability. So like we said, we're looking for alternative sources.
Yeah, then look at your windfall taxes and price controls. So politicians in Europe have resorted to windfall taxes and price controls, which may produce short-term political gains but could lead to reduced investment in supply in critical industries. And then lastly, you've got the fiscal deficit. So Europe's aggressive fiscal measures amidst events like the COVID-19 and the Russia-Ukraine conflict have resulted in high fiscal deficits, reminiscent of those seen in many emerging market economies. So this again poses risks of external shocks and currency devaluation.
Yes, another reason why the VIX is up and perhaps gold is on the rally at the moment. So really, this article is a great read, like we said, and it's suggesting that there's blurred lines between developed and emerging economies, that developed markets are adopting classic emerging market strategies like pricing control and nationalization in order to help the current economic climate they're facing, while certain emerging markets are moving towards more favorable regulatory regimes and experiencing growth, and they're more pro-business at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. So Europe's adoption of policies resembling those of emerging markets really raises concerns about its long-term competitiveness. Meanwhile, emerging markets like India, Brazil are really implementing the reforms to stimulate growth, creating a really favourable investment environment, which is why we're really liking investing in emerging markets at the moment with the right fund manager. So on that, back to investable ideas and ways to gain exposure to emerging markets. Now, we've already mentioned one manager already, GQG Partners. They've actually got two classes in their emerging markets equity fund, being Share Class A and Share Class Z. Now, Share Class A, the management fee is 0.96, while Z is 0.86. It's actually Share Class A has actually been around since 2017, which is the longer running share class. So I'm going to go through that performance. It's actually performed 12.7% since inception versus the benchmark, which is the MSCI Emerging Markets Index ex tobacco, which has only been 5.31% over the same period. Now, over the last year, it's returned a whopping 47.07%, to be exact, with the benchmark at, you know, not bad, still pretty good, double digits, 11.02%. And it's really because they have had a preference towards technology, and their top country's weighting is India, 29.2%, followed closely by Brazil at 18.1%, versus the benchmark, which is China, 24.8%, and Taiwan, 17.6%. So we'll look to get GQG on the show soon, as it's always great to actually get the manager on the show who consistently outperforms. We love having them on Talk Money to Me. So if you're listening, we want to get you on the show.
We'll get to book you in. Now, another manager we've already had on the show is Fidelity. They have a global emerging markets fund, which invests anywhere between 30 to 50 different companies within their portfolio, which they believe generate returns throughout all market cycles, so up and down, and have demonstrated a track record of strong corporate governance, which is a really important factor when we looked at EMs, as we spoke about. This one's a bit older, so been around since 2013, and since inception, the fund's returned 8.18% per annum, outperforming the benchmark by about 2% in that same period. The fund holds about 22% weighting to China, which is slightly under the index benchmark at about 25% weighting to China as a geography. Then it's followed, as you can imagine, by India, Taiwan, and South Korea, all weightings in terms of those geographical regions over 10% asset allocation. So Fidelity and GQG are two managers that we like in the emerging markets sector.
Yeah, and look, of course, you can also invest into emerging markets via ETFs. Now, there's plenty to choose from, but we'll mention a couple here. You've got the Van Eck MSCI Multi-Factor Emerging Markets ETF. The code is EMKT on the ASX. Now, this ETF gives you a large diversified exposure to emerging markets, with over 220 companies actually making up the ETF. Really low cost, 0.69%. The total return since inception, which was the 10th of April 2018, has been 5.54%. The weightings, China, India, Taiwan, and South Korea being the top geographic weightings. Then we've also got iShares. So the iShares MSCI Emerging Markets ETF. The code is EEM.
I like that ticker. EEM.
EEM. Now, this ETF gives you a large, again, diversified exposure with over 800 companies, so that's even bigger. Cost is 0.7. Return has been 8.37% per annum since inception, which was actually back in 2003. Similar to EMKT, it's got China, India, Taiwan, and South Korea are the top geographic weightings. A few names in this ETF that we'll point out: Taiwan Semiconductor, Samsung, Tencent, and Alibaba.
Yeah, all names you expect to see in emerging market ETF for sure, or any fund really. And Taiwan Semi has been another one of those stocks on a massive run lately, thanks to AI tailwinds up, you know, the share price over 40% in the past 6 months, which is just love it. Love seeing that.
Yeah. And look, that makes sense. It's also one of GQG's top positions as well as other funds and ETFs. So makes sense.
So to wrap up, guys, and to leave you with a few key points as to why we think investors should consider an allocation into emerging markets. Really, on a high level, here are some interesting stats which to me speak the most volume when it comes to the opportunity in EMs. So in terms of emerging markets, it's really important to note that it's been growing rapidly in recent years. In fact, emerging markets and developing economies now contribute over 50% of all global growth, and emerging markets are expected to contribute 60% of global growth not that far away by 2025. And if we look back at the data, since 2010, emerging economies have had an output that is slightly larger than its counterparties in the developed world. And if you're wondering why this is, well, simply put, emerging markets account for 70% of the world's population, and half of that is land mass. So it's simply too big to ignore, and most of the world's population that live in EM are young as well. So they're consuming more, which is pushing more economic growth into their economies. And emerging markets have gone at warp speed in comparison to the developed world over the past 500 years, if you look at that history time horizon, where emerging markets and developing economies were really dominated and left behind, you know, stuck in the agricultural sector and cheap manufacturing sectors. But fast forward, you know, they really had what was an industrial revolution of 100 plus years for most developed economies. They did that in a short period of time, and they've thrown themselves in essentially into the 21st century, where they're forced to really just adopt and take up the AI revolution, the technology revolution, and the more modern lifestyle that we all live. So therefore, as we said at the beginning of this show, they've really had to play catch up quick, which is why there's a lot of exciting companies and innovative startups to come out of the emerging markets. So keep an eye out, guys, for this part of equities within your portfolio, because it could be something that you'd have a serious conversation with your financial advisor or an investment advisor or whoever you speak to about your portfolio to consider for you and your goals moving forward. Now, that's a wrap, guys. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and our insights into emerging markets. If you'd like to learn more about any of the ETFs or funds mentioned in today's episode, please reach out to us via email. And you can do that via our email address, which is cftgroup@shorenpartners.com.au.
And if you like today's show, help us out, give us a review of 5 stars and share our podcast with your family and friends. And remember, before we sign off, although Candice and I are financial advisors at Shore & Partners, please note our discussion does not constitute personal financial advice. As always, you should seek professional financial advice before making any financial or investment decisions. Until next time.
See you then.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.